This is The Naked Scientists with me, Ben Valsler, and with Dave Ansell. Still to come, we'll find out how to extract a useful gas fuel from hard-to-access coal and how to turn waste carbon dioxide into valuable chemicals.
But now, in the late 1940s, a chemist called Willard Libby, who'd originally worked on uranium during the Manhattan Project, developed a method of dating material with a biological origin. As it's radioactive, the levels of carbon-14 in the material decrease as it ages, but the amount of stable carbon-12 doesn't change. Therefore, by looking at the ratio of carbon-12 and radioactive carbon-14, he could date the material. Today, radiocarbon dating, as it's called, is an extremely accurate and useful tool to date an archaeological find that contains any previously living material. Planet Earth podcast presenter Sue Nelson met Tom Higham from the Oxford Radiocarbon Accelerator Unit to find out how it works.
This machine, its job, is basically to take tiny amounts of graphite, which contain the carbon, and therefore the carbon-14, that derive from the archaeological bone or charcoal or whatever it happens to be, and to separate from all of the other interfering particles just the carbon-14. So this is rather like a large sieve. And the way it does that is by particle acceleration, by beam bending the particles so that they can be separated by magnetic forces. The problem that we have, though, is that a tiny amount of that carbon is carbon-14. One particle in a billion is carbon-14. So that's why we need such a large machine to be able to separate all of the interfering particles that aren't carbon-14 from carbon-14.
So if you had a bone, for example, that you wanted to analyse, where would it actually go?
The first stage is to take the bone, to take about half a teaspoon of powder from the bone, and to extract the collagen from that bone. Stage two is then to combust the collagen, purify the gas, and convert the carbon dioxide into graphite. And then the graphite is then loaded into one of those small aluminium holders there.
This almost looks like a gun canister with bullets.
Yeah, and then you see this little hole on the top. It's about a millimetre in circumference. That contains the graphite from the bone, and it's pressed very firmly onto the top of this target, and then it's put into this large wheel of samples here, which number about 50 or 60. And once the accelerator is loaded with this wheel, a cesium beam is projected onto the surface of the graphite, and that process, called sputtering, gives charge to the particles. And that is really, really important, because if we don't give the particles a charge, that means we can't bend them, we can't move their trajectory and separate the particles from other particles of a different mass.
Let's go into the quieter area now.
This is the control room where the measurements are monitored and the machine is started, stopped, and also where the dates are calculated. In the old days, it used to take a day or so to calculate a batch of radiocarbon dates, but now, of course, we have computers that do it in the space of a blink of an eye.
How do you actually tell the age of something from the amount of radioactive carbon in it?
The dating process is built around the half-life of radiocarbon. The half-life simply means the amount of time it takes for half of the radioactive carbon that is present per gram of material in a living organism to decay after death and disappear. So we know that the half-life of radiocarbon is about 5,500 years. That means that every 5,500 years, the amount of radiocarbon declines by half. So after 10 half-lives, you're back to around 55,000 years, and then there should be no more carbon-14 left. So that marks the limit of the dating technique. The great thing about radiocarbon dating is that carbon is ubiquitous in the biosphere, so there are many different types of material that we could date, whether they be bones, charcoal, wood, to things like mollusks and fish bones, pollen. Since the 1950s, there's been a doubling of the amount of radiocarbon in the world because of the nuclear testing that took place in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. So if we measure something that's modern being since 1950, we can get a very high level of radioactive carbon that we know therefore must equate with a date in the modern period.
Modern particle accelerators and pre-treating samples to remove contaminants have improved the accuracy of radiocarbon dating. In some cases, artifacts need to be retested, and Tom's unit helped produce recent research which suggested that Neanderthals probably died out 10,000 years earlier than previously thought.
Unfortunately, in many cases, when we do this work, we find that the previous dates are underestimating the real age. So there's a huge amount of work to be done still in applying these new techniques to find the real chronological picture.
So you could actually put a lot of noses out of joint.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's fair to say that there are a lot of people with a lot of vested interests in this, and they've written a lot over the last few decades, and they've been involved in bitter arguments that in some cases are over data that we now know is probably not reliable. So yes, there is a tendency to do that.
That was Tom Hyam from the Oxford Radiocarbon Accelerator Unit talking to Sue Nelson. You can find out more about Planet Earth resources online at thenakedscientist.com/planetearth.